You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Now's a good time to remember where the story of tequila started. In 1795, the first tequila distillery was opened by the Cuervo family. And 229 years later, Cuervo is still going strong. Family-owned from the start, same family, same land. Now's a good time to enjoy Cuervo, the tequila that invented tequila. Go to Cuervo.com to shop tequila or visit a store near you. Cuervo, now's a good time.
Trademarks owned by Becle, SAB, the CV. Copyright 2024, Proximo. Jersey City, New Jersey. Please drink responsibly.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz Podcast.
We are presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We have been talking about the Manti Te'o documentary, Untold, on Netflix. The directors are going to join us here in a few minutes to talk about the story, the layered story that they told well. Untold is a very good series if you like sports, if you like documentaries. Almost all of them have been very well-told stories, artfully crafted. We'll do that in about 20 minutes. But you guys were talking in the kitchen during the break about Matthew Berry, Matthew Berry's career. I believe Matthew Berry wrote or helped write one of the Crocodile Dundee movies.
What? The talented Mr. Roto.
Well, you're having him on your on Stupidity, correct?
He's on today's episode of Stupidity. I think Billy feels the same way. Billy's not here today, but we found ourselves being insanely jealous of Matthew Berry, wanting to be Matthew Berry. He's got relationships, Dan. He was talking to us hours before he was leaving to go to Jay-Z's draft. He's friends with Jay-Z. They text each other all the time. He's friends with Hugh Jackman. Everyone wants Matthew Berry's information. And I want to be Matthew Berry. I want to be the guy that has the information that you want.
This has been a fascinating oil well to see spring up next to football and create more and more interest in the popularity of football. Fantasy has been a runaway train of making people have appetites for, I need more information. I crave these podcasts that will tell me how to build a good team. There is a communal extra bonus steroid sports thing happening when you can root for both your team and then have your ADD fed by your other team. Your team on Sunday that is playing on the field, and then you've got, because you need more stimuli, more stimuli, more stimuli. It's 16 Sundays or now 17. You're feeding on this stuff. It can't just be the action. Right. Fantasy football has mushroom clouded into an enormous money-making vehicle for a whole lot of people, including our partner DraftKings. And Matthew Berry is the one name associated with it more than any other, correct? One, if fantasy had a face, if fantasy had a name, the guy who pioneered it was this guy through ESPN.
No doubt. Yes.
And now there are a whole lot of imitators and probably people who do it maybe even better, but he's the original gangster, correct?
Correct. And it's also not even just about the information, although he comes out with a lot of gems and does a generally good job. It's the packaging, right? It's the love-hate column. It's the entertainment. And you read his writing. It's fantasy within a context. There are plenty of people who do this very well on the internet. And as you said, perhaps better. But he's entertaining. And sometimes the people that do fantasy football are not exactly brilliant personalities. He's got a personality. He's funny.
And it's like a winning spot for him because who's checking on these weekly receiver rankings and running back rankings?
Like,
there's not a lot of accountability of, oh, actually, I couldn't tell you how great he actually is at predicting how people are going to do.
Well, I don't imagine that you play fantasy quite perhaps as meticulously as others. I would imagine that if Matthew Berry was always getting it wrong, that there would be plenty of people who know that. Like, you might not be playing that aggressively, but I would think that in the community that values information, and money is made here in valuing information, if Matthew Berry's consistently getting it wrong, there's a whole subset of people who know that and are mocking him for it. I don't think that would be any kind of secret, but maybe he's not getting it that kind of wrong. Maybe his expertise is such, because there are people who are good at this. It's not all random, Chris. It's not all...
No, but Matt will tell you, Dan, he will say, like, hey, I'm guessing a lot. Like, I have no idea if a guy's going to get injured, if the matchup's actually good, but he is.
Well, wait a minute. Those are two different things. Hold on. I do believe many of the analysts do know whether a matchup is good. Injuries you can't predict.
Right.
But man,
a good matchup doesn't necessarily mean a great game for that wide receiver.
No, but it means you're playing probabilities, and everyone's trying to win money because somebody else has better probabilities. Like, that's where the game's being. When you're talking about fantasy, is not just this hobby. Hey, maybe I get lucky. I'm playing the lotto. I know the odds are bad. When you're playing against these winners who are populating this feeding system, who win the majority of the DraftKings things because there are people who have some expertise around this who are not getting. Which one's Matthew Berry? Which, can someone tell me with some expertise? Not he's famous guy. Is Matthew Berry so good at this that his information is better than other information and he's being held accountable, and when he gets it wrong, there are people telling you, now that guy's a construct of just being entertaining. He's not actually one of the guys who's measuring matchups and giving you good probabilities.
I imagine his Twitter replies every weekend will show someone that said, you ranked this guy number 47, so I didn't start him, and so I had him on my bench, and therefore I lost that week, you jackass. But generally, it's a combination of entertainment and also, like, really, fantasy football expertise is about showing your work. And so when you say, I'm ranking this person this place, or I think I'm going to have this person as a sleeper, as a bust, or as a whatever, you just say it's because of this statistical trend. It's because, Jalen Hurts was quarterback number 7 for the last 10 weeks of the year, and so I'm ranking him this year as quarterback number 7, and that might surprise you because you wouldn't have Jalen Hurts as the 7th best quarterback, but because he rushes so much, he's more valuable in fantasy. And as long as you show your work, and you're entertaining, like, there's not going to be a ton of people who are going to stop listening because they ultimately will have way more information than you because they study it more than you do.
Here's the thing with Matthew Berry. Matthew Berry is bringing to the normal person the fantasy industry, right? Like, there are so many layers that you can get into on DFS, on redraft, on a bunch of different things where there are nerds everywhere typing
in leagues and keeper leagues.
There are Excel spreadsheets with numbers that you can't even imagine, right? Formulas that you can't even imagine for ADOT, for yards per carry, for yards after catch, all these different things.
Yak.
What he's doing is he's giving it and making it palatable for the everyday consumer, for the person that's at the water cooler, like, oh, I drafted 2 in the 3rd round. Like, people that don't know, what he's doing is providing them information.
As I've aged out of some of this stuff and never had much interest in it, when Bill Lawrence says to you that he doesn't like how one of his kids consumes sports, Bill Lawrence is my age, and he is mortified that all of the human beings have become transactions and numbers and things to be moved on a Wall Street grid because you can win money over here or win your fantasy league. These people aren't human beings. Kevin Durant isn't even a shithead. He's just something that I slot in over here for 30 points a game. Does this affect in any way the social elements of sports that I've always loved analyzing? If I keep making these people less and less human in the places where you find the greatest of fandoms, the most zealous of fandoms, and they're just numbers,
they're just slotted in guys on your roster,
be transacted, right? As we love sports more than ever because of the transaction. Where's Kevin Durant going to go? We love transactions, and there's this fantasy world that is more and more real, where the athletes get chewed up in the maw of it, their humanity.
But I think that fantasy makes me care about other, like, I care about the Dolphins, and now I'm rooting for Patrick Mahomes. I'm rooting for these guys on other teams. I become fans of these
guys
through
fantasy. You'll
find yourself
rooting for guys you never thought you would root for.
I think you'll root for a Jet.
It expands
my fandom of football. It makes me more interested to watch all the football games as opposed to just the Dolphins game.
The only danger in it is when it becomes proprietary, where you only, like, if you saw Sean Alexander, this, oh, I had you in 2013. What a great season. And you feel like some sort of the word that I don't like in fantasy football is ownership, right? Oh, you are a 97% owner of, you know, whatever, right? And that, like, that word sounds bad. And ESPN actually once got in trouble for this because there is a form of fantasy football that is auction style drafting, where you start with a player at $1 and you bid them up, and then whoever has the highest bid gets the player. And they did a live auction.
Billy
of
and I were in
players.
Bristol when that happened.
Really?
I remember that.
Yeah.
We were like, that doesn't seem great.
It was after some other civil rights statue controversy, and it was terrible. It was just, it was like
you were thinking this, Chris.
Yeah, like I just Billy and I. Yes,
it
I remember.
Days
us,
later.
Yes, it was like we were there in Bristol the day they did, and then it didn't make. I made news for it, and we were just like, "Wow, we were here for this."
It was terrible judgment.
I love Stu Gatz going, wow, even Chris had good judgment on that one.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. But is that not perfect as the symbolism for what we all kind of wish in our fantasies, that we were the owner of whatever that.
Whether that's what makes fantasy appealing, right? We become more than owner. I go with
GM.
Yes. You want to be the GM making the decision, starting people, sitting people, cutting people, trading people, drafting people. It's like it makes me feel like I'm running a team.
And as a champion of my fantasy football league for four of the last
for the love
6 years.
Of Jesus, come
Christ.
On.
I mean, come look on. At me,
that's a different character.
Go
that's
ahead.
Resume guy.
Say the person that's in the league. You know, you want to say it.
Yeah, this is a league that a fantasy football expert is in, Jamie Eisenberg of CBS Sports.
He says it once a week.
He's in one of my leagues also. He's in baseball. Inferno's beaten him 6 out of the last 7 years. I mean.
But I've won my league for the last 6 years, and I feel a measure of expertise and like, wow, I'm good at this. I could do this.
You do walk into that draft with like a little, that's
champ.
Right. I'm here.
Yep.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Like, people in the chat are going, oh, who cares about this? Witty's just going to win again. I feel like I swelled with pride.
There's a certain something when you make your first round pick. It's like everyone's paying attention.
Have people dropped out because they're tired of you winning? They think you're so good at it?
As a matter of fact, two people did drop out of the league this past year. I don't know if me winning it at a canter has anything to do with it, but I'm not going to say it doesn't have anything to do with it.
We've had some dropouts because Inferno keeps winning. He's so much better than anyone else at baseball that he keeps winning and people keep falling by the wayside. We're down to 9 teams. I mean, we started with 12.
Young people get to decide on what's popular. Young people who have been playing fantasy and really consuming sports and loving sports more because these tentacles grab you and addict you and make Sundays and Saturdays even more fun than they already were because you've got action all over the place. I do believe that when Bill Lawrence ends up lamenting that his child is treating numbers or athletes as numbers on a page, that it is sort of how old people in music lament that today's music isn't the way that they prefer their music, that their fandom was a different thing that didn't come with, hell, the idea that you could go to the internet and find numbers that quantify how good your player actually is. We did, never mind the internet, we didn't have the numbers. We didn't know how we were doing the measurements, and fantasy has helped us like put a math on this, put emotional relationships beyond the 36-7 game that might not otherwise be interesting because you have a proprietary interest in that tight end getting a fourth catch for you. You need Kyle
PPR,
Rudolph. You need Kyle Rudolph to go over 33.5 yards because you need the action.
I mean, it's 60% of the appeal of Monday Night Football, isn't it? I might even be underselling it. In terms of gambling and fantasy, is like the whole reason why Monday Night Football draws a huge rating.
Do you like having fantasy players Monday night, Thursday night? I don't really like it.
The perfect scenario is to have an above average tight end who needs like 50 receiving yards. That's it. It's a nice little sweet spot. Not too crazy to get to, but not too easy.
That still scares me,
though. One TD. That's all you need. It is scary, but it's fun. 5.1.
And how does that one get the most fun? When your guy gets it in the first quarter?
Last drive of the game.
Quick drive. And easy.
And to your point,
no,
it's a drive.
It's a garbage drive at the end of the game.
Right,
yes,
exactly.
Yes.
It's a drive that has no significance. And yet the only significance is that Kyle Rudolph just got 19 yards, and that's a victory for me.
Dan, you're watching it like you're watching the Super Bowl. I mean,
I've actually had a game end like that where I want to say it was 2 years ago. We were in COVID, and I think the Bills and the Colts played in like Canada or something. We were like, wow, this game is weird. And they were playing like a high school field. And Gabe Davis on the last drive with like, I don't even know who it was. I'm trying to think. It was Matt Barkley.
We'll
threw the
it,
ball
think
to Gabe
it.
Davis as the game was ending. He catches and falls for like a 15-yard game, and I won by like 0.7.
Oh, my God.
It was
God.
Huge.
I
screamed
motion.
So loud. Oh, win. My God.
I one time last season, I was down by like 9 points going into the last game, and I had Tyreek Hill.
We're finally here.
I hate this. Yes. We cannot be that show. Let me tell you about my fantasy league. I will not do that show. This is a trick with you guys. I can always throw this
Chris
bait.
Was in the middle of the story.
This bait in the water at any time, and you guys are just all too eager to all become Greg Cody. I thought you'd never ask. Let me tell you about the
time.
Do
you want to hear how it ended?
No!
I do!
I don't want to hear about any of these goddamn stories. Go fuck yourselves!
Oh my God!
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Dan Le Batard.
Chris Cody does an impression. Just be careful.
Dangerous game here. This is a dangerous game.
I don't want to play this game.
No, he was saying, man, I could do such a great Kendrick.
No, I don't want to play this game.
He's like, man, I this can talk just
gonna,
like him.
This is who we're going to trust
Amin,
with
you
this.
Do it. Let's let Amin do it, I think.
Stugatz.
I think you could do it, Chris, because you did a great Charles Barkley. You're one for one there.
Did no two one just hear the segment we just did with Amin? We cannot be
Amin's
taking
judgment is not the
counsel
best.
From the local drunk on whether or not you should do the impersonation of a black man stumbling over his words. Like, you don't see the bad in that.
There it was.
Moses Moody? Moody Moses? Moses?
Don't.
Moody?
You need that. It sounds
Chris.
Worse.
Be careful, man.
We gotta, we cannot do this. It's too close to the line. This is where the line is. Something legitimately funny can't be funny because we're scared our ginger's going to do something racist by accident.
Carry the hell on, Dan.
Rachel.
Dan, the line is where we feel alive, though.
This is the Dan Le Batard Show with the Stugatz.
We're presented by DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NFL. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use code DAN for a special offer when you sign up. That's code DAN, only at DraftKings Sportsbook.
We've been telling you about the Untold series on Netflix. Very few poorly told stories over there. They're going to sports and they're telling stories where the terrain has been covered pretty good, and there's new stuff all around them. And one of them we've been discussing recently was made by the Way brothers, Chapman and McLean, and they're joining us now. It's Untold Series Volume 2. It is on Netflix now, and thank you for making the time for us. I guess I'll start with you, Chapman. Can you take us through? These people hadn't talked before. You kind of need the stories to be most human by getting two people to talk who were pretty gun-shy talking about this. So how did the research before this story come to be told?
Great. Is this about the Manti Te'o girlfriend who didn't exist? Because we have a few untold, so just wanted to double
yes,
check.
No, I'm talking, forgive
that
me.
One,
I, okay, right. Wow, look at me, Louie. We have a few untold.
Sorry.
Pardon
Library
me.
Of movies.
Yes,
I mean.
My bad.
Nine of them now. Which one do you
want to the one you're here to promote, gentlemen, not your sprawling empire of untold stories. Right. No, this one.
We can talk about the 1983 America's Cup one and the getting those people on board. No, I'm kidding. Go ahead. Tell them about it. Yeah, we did a volume one for Netflix last year. Had some great stories like Malice at the Palace and Caitlyn Jenner and Marty Fish, the tennis player. And, you know, for volume two, we had kind of like a Word doc of stories that are like dream stories for us and kind of like white whales in the sports space. And obviously the Manti Te'o catfishing hoax has been a story that, like, when it broke was obviously massive. But since then, Manti never has really done a full in-depth interview on what happened. And Naya, the person behind the catfishing scandal, had never really spoken out on the record before either. And so for us, it was like, let's go reach out to them. Let's see if there's maybe more to the story than what was reported at the time. Because that's what we're trying to do a little bit with Untold, is we have, you know, the benefit of having 10 years hindsight with a story like this. And we can go back and see what maybe is different about the story through today's lens. And so we reached out to both of them. And right off the bat, we're like, we realized just how profound and impacted they both were by this scandal, and more than we ever imagined. And at that point, I think we realized these are going to be like really raw and vulnerable interviews for Untold.
But how did you cross the bridge to their humanity? Who was doing what in order for those people to not just immediately shut you out? It's one thing for them to want to tell their story. It's another thing to trust you with it.
Yeah, I think that like it really just starts with like long conversations and meetings, and you just start the process of building trust. I do think that just with this story, we did have the benefit of like neither Naya nor Manti, I think, were exceptionally happy with how the story was covered. And I think that they weren't happy with like the period that was at the end of the sentence, you know, and I think that they wanted to kind of keep writing the sentence or a paragraph or a book, so to speak, and keep telling the story. But I mean, Naya was like fascinating. Like we you know, first time we hopped on a call with her, it was supposed to maybe be like 10, 15, 20 minutes. And like, she kind of just like ran us through like this kind of like just very, very, very like interesting journey of like self-discovery and identity that she had gone through and the impact that this story had on his life. And Manti, I think like, I just think like, we by no means were the first person to approach Manti Te'o to do a documentary on this. It's like, I think when we were like first talking to his representatives in a way, there was almost a notion of like, yeah, dude, like your pitch can join like the pile of pitches that has come in over the last like 2 years on this. But I do think we got like Manti at a really interesting point. We partnered up with like a couple filmmakers, Ryan Duffy and Tony Vanuku, who just did a brilliant job on the episode. But Manti's NFL career was winding down. He had just gotten married. He had a kid, I think, for like the first time. He was like really willing to open up and talk about this. And I know like reading kind of some of the interviews that he's done on this, and I didn't even know this, but it just was very interesting for me to hear him talk about it, was I think when he like walked into the interview, he probably underestimated how much he was still like grappling and wrestling with the impact that this entire thing had on his life. And listen, when we do interviews, like we do like 3-4 day interviews with our subjects, they're super long. And I think towards the end of the interview is when Manti really started to kind of like grapple with some of the larger stuff that this has had on his life. And it was just a super, super fascinating process. So grateful to both of them for really telling their story, to be honest.
Yeah, they trusted you with an intimate thing. And there was a degree of difficulty on the story that you were trying to tell. It did force compassion and understanding on the people watching it. And the story was very well told. When I ask both of you, though, what one thing would you say was the most interesting thing about the film? Do you have the same answer or do you have a different answer?
I don't know. I think the most interesting thing for me was kind of like the last kind of 7 minutes of the documentary, when Manti kind of starts going into his first games as an NFL player and these anxiety attacks that would hit him, and his feet would go numb and his hands would go numb. And I think hearing a professional athlete talk in those terms, I remember just watching the footage and being like, wow, this is pretty powerful stuff. And then kind of seeing like the cathartic release he had. I think we're so used to professional athletes being a little bit, keep things closer to the vest and bottled up. And to see him be that open and raw in front of our cameras, I think for me was just like a really powerful moment as a filmmaker.
I remember like our early conversations with like our producers and our directors. And like, I think it was like hard for me to get my mind around the fact that there was media that had like heavily implied that Manti was like in on the hoax, you know? And then like just like working with Manti and like getting to know him, like it was almost more of a confusion than it was like I don't believe that. Like I kept asking, like, explain it to me, like how he could be in on this, like and what he gains. And like I understand the concept of the kind of conspiracy, so to speak, but I think just like making this documentary and working with it, like
you can, they're like, all of our characters kind of made some mistakes, or they kind of, you know, done things that maybe they shouldn't have done. But in terms of like Manti being like in on this, it was just like, and now like having released the documentary and talked to people and their reaction to it, it's just like almost really surprising. Like when we first started out on this, there was like an element of like, how was Manti in on it? Like I didn't even know. And now I'm just like very convinced that like he really wasn't at all.
I have a question about that specifically in talking about this documentary, which I love, by the way, and talking about it with friends. I was reminded about how culpable Deadspin was in framing that narrative, actually. Within the reporting, there was a line about alluding to him possibly being in on it, and some of the rumors surrounding Manti's sexuality. Also, you could trace it back to Deadspin, and that wasn't really covered all that much in this documentary. And if I had one criticism, I would have liked to have seen Deadspin held a little bit more accountable and let them frame a narrative a little bit. They were even holding other networks like, oh, you missed this, you missed this. I'm like, you guys got tipped off. You missed it too. You were playing the same game.
Yeah, I think like the documentary does go into like sports journalism a little bit, and the difficulty in if you work at a press organization needing to get stories out first. And I think, I don't know what the right or wrong answer to that is. Obviously, they got a tip. They did pretty incredible research into diving into the story and trying to put the pieces together. I do think it's interesting that they gave Manti an hour to respond. You know, I think that's, I don't know what the standard practices are. We're filmmakers, more on the filmmaking side, less on the journalist side. I don't think Tim and Jack necessarily knew how massive the story was going to get. So I think it's definitely easy in hindsight to be like, wow, man, they might have alluded that Manti was in on it and created an avalanche of problems for Manti. It's always difficult to tell, but yeah,
I think you also kind of got to consider like at what point they came into the story. And like, I do empathize with the fact that like the facts that they're able to draw is like Manti's had a girlfriend for the last like three and a half, four years. I think everyone, especially at that time, probably would have had an understanding like you must have been meeting this person, you must have been spending time with this person. And then obviously like the context that the documentary gives does explain why Manti, even after he found out that this girlfriend was alive again, but in media wasn't willing to publicly talk about this yet in the course of a Heisman campaign. And then like Notre Dame as like an institution is kind of like circling the wagons to a degree, which I actually understand. You know, I think that they're kind of like have their own, you know, they're their own institution. They have their own football championship football game to worry about. And so in a way, I think that like, it maybe for the Deadspin guys, it just felt like a lot of smoke, and where there's smoke, there's fire. But I don't know how they feel about it today. I mean, I'd be interested to hear if they think like, I don't think that they think Manti's in on it, and on the hoax anymore. I don't know that for sure, but in a way, like they were rushing fast. And I get that, you know, and really like in a way I am grateful, because if they don't pursue that tip, a lot of those tips end up at the bottom of inboxes. Like, this story goes nowhere. We're not here talking about it today, you know? So very interesting characters, though, in the documentary.
So you're grateful, ultimately, that Manti Te'o got catfished so you could make a film at his expense. So good. It worked out for you. The whole thing worked out for you. And I suppose that's the only thing that really matters.
But you guys are talking to us today on your podcast, too. So
that's right. That's right.
Too,
we're all in on it. Look, we're all in on this dirty game.
We're all in on this dirty content game.
Yeah, you'd catfish anyone to have this movie. Because it's hard to really reach people, move people with a story that has this much terrain on it. Let me ask you both this. In feedback from friends and people you've shared this with after you've made the movie, what's the criticism that you're like, ooh, that's good criticism. I wish we'd done that. I wish that we'd gone deeper there.
When you make these things, you're kind of like looking for new characters, new interesting characters, because like every time you introduce a new character with a new purpose or point in the story, it just kind of like adds energy. Like, we open up episode 2 on the Deadspin guys. It's like a fresh face. You've been in the Manti and Naya relationship for episode 1. The one person that we like super wanted to get was Diane O'Meara, who is the actual woman whose like images were being used by Naya. if that makes sense, like the actual person whose photos were being used to catfish Manti. And she didn't want to be a part of it. I totally get it. She's like, I think said something along the lines of like, I'm not interested in revisiting this in some way. But there is a part of me where it's like, I don't know if that's like criticism we've gotten, but when I do watch the documentary, I feel a little pain and like, God damn, I think it would have been a super interesting conversation to have with a person because she was like an unwilling participant in this. Like her name and face was just like being used and she wakes up one day and her Facebook photos are on the front page of like Good Morning America and all these talk shows and Anderson Cooper and CNN. And I think it just would have been like a super fascinating perspective to hear from. And I am disappointed that we came up short trying to secure her participation. But what do you think? Any?
No criticisms. I'm not just 10 out of 10.
Yeah, just applause. Just yes. Nonstop right.
About
applause.
About all your movies. Yes, yes
no
of course.
Right. Yeah. It's just a perfect piece of documentary.
Object to the question. No,
kidding. Were you expecting him to be angry? He didn't seem to be angry at anyone, and that surprised me.
I thought that as a symbol, you could go ahead and replace Touchdown Jesus and put just his general forgiveness at the center of campus, and it is what every religion should aspire to get somebody have be those this clearly f***ed, like just wrong so many different ways and not be angry about it, still have peace in his heart. Somehow.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, no, we're definitely more petty than Manti is. And I think we probably would have handled things with not as much grace. So it was pretty amazing to kind of see how he's come out.
I'm curious what you guys think, which is like, what do you think? Manti got drafted in the second round. Like, how much money do you think, if you had to put a dollar amount on it, how much money do you think he lost in his draft picks?
Mike, what do you think? Manti Te'o went down in the draft and you can never
quantify. He was projected as a first round pick.
You can never quantify these things. And I just sort of thought, okay, look, Notre Dame got exposed at the end. He wasn't actually that good. It was a lot of hype around a guy who would have been going in with this great story that didn't have confusion around it.
He was probably a Heisman finalist, I think.
But how much higher would he have been drafted?
That's why I wish that Deadspin were held a little bit more responsible about the narrative that not just their reporting did by alluding he was in on it, but that shaped everybody's first impression of it. So what is he hiding by being in on it? And obviously people's minds at the time went to a front. And at the time, Michael Sam hadn't happened. There wasn't an openly gay player in the NFL. And there was a circus around him at the combine. And people thought that this was a front for some big secret. And it truly damaged
his draft
stock.
There was sexuality stuff going on where the football was not equipped for what is this catfishing thing we're all learning at the name Manti Te'o, where a lot of people, the curiosities, the mysteries around this. So what did you guys think when you examine what it is that happened to his career after that? I don't believe anybody before watching this movie knows what a crushing, seismic, life-changing thing this was, that he couldn't help but be a lesser football player carrying this around as a public fool, a guy brought up this way with all the cultural stuff you guys were saying, to be a pillar of pride, to be ashamed at being an innocent, to being an innocent fool.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it had like a devastating impact both on his career, obviously how the NFL looked at him, the media circus that just trailed him everywhere he went. And then personally, like psychologically, confidence, you know, I think like he talks about that at length in the documentary. This is a guy that could just make pure tackles all throughout high school, obviously dominated Hawaiian football, dominated NCAA football. And then kind of, wasn't able to really tap into that at the higher level at the NFL. But no, I mean, I think that like, I don't even know if we plan on asking him the question. I didn't do the interview, but I thought one of the more interesting points, and it's just a small detail, but they asked him, how many NFL teams asked you about this when you were going through the combine and the draft and the interview process? And he slowly realizes that every single team asked him about this. I don't know if it was their first question, but I definitely think it was probably their most important question they were asking him. And I think it severely like impacted probably the his draft pick, which turns into money. And who knows, maybe. And I think even his performance on the field, it was all very I don't know if we knew that. I don't know if I would have guessed that, you know, before starting the documentary. But in working with Manti and hearing the words out of his mouth, I believe him, you know.
If you have to itemize the things, what should we feel as a fandom, as a viewing audience, most ashamed of? You guys got into the thicket and the weeds of this. for our contributions as zealots and as nosy busybodies to wreck lives? Like, where are the lessons in here for us on shame?
Really good question. It's a really good question. I think, like, I'll take a stab first. I think that there's, like, an element to, and maybe we're getting it right and better now, but I just found it fascinating that, like, and I don't even know if Manti feels this way. I don't think he does. This is my own opinion. But, like, seeing this, like, 19, 20-year-old kid on the cover of Sports Illustrated, a full Manti, like the fantasy of NCAA college football, and realizing how young these kids are. You know, like, I'm getting older now. I'm like in my early 30s. Like, I'm starting to get 10 years older than these guys. And like Notre Dame, a bit as an institution, there's just so much money, and it's such a weird cottage industry at times. I'm a fan of it too, and like I participate in it, and it brings me joy and happiness as a fan. But I do, when I make a documentary on this, I kind of struggle with the notion of not just Manti, but all these kids kind of being like exploited in a way that is just shocking. And I think Manti was like maybe at the height of that. You know, like his persona, name, image, just raking in massive like season ticket sales and huge meat. And I don't know. I just don't know if he ended up like walking away with anything that was helpful for him in his life. I think he just stood to only lose in that system in a way. And I just don't know if that's a very fair system. But anything you have to say?
I think your brother's tired, like, of hearing you talk. I think your brother's, yeah, exactly. Like, I don't know, not just on this tour, but in general, like, you guys have been working together for a long time. And what I think is
the other brother just, all he does is brag. I mean, a couple of ways, cutting it up.
How much longer are we going to be on here, guys? This is not how I want to end.
Forgive us, though, please. I interrupted you. But I feel you had the look on your face of like, God, I got to hear this again. I got to hear my brother sermonize about all the philosophical stuff, you know. And he's always doing this stuff while I'm cutting tape in the back. He's ruminating.
Permission to speak.
Yeah,
Matt.
Yeah. Go
permission
ahead. Go ahead. Speak.
All right, great. I've gotten permission from my younger brother.
I know.
I think the kind of hero worshiping of college athletes is a little strange. You know, I think, like, I don't know what's what the heart of sports is supposed to be about. And it was this strange stew of like building this kid up as an absolute hero. And then when the media scandal broke, it was like, there's part of me that's wondering, would this have been so traumatic if it was just that he got catfished, but no media scandal? I think a lot of the trauma and a lot of the pain and a lot of the anxiety kind of came from the media melee that followed. So I think those were the two things that kind of interested me the most when making this.
How do you guys settle creative disputes?
Arm wrestle. No.
We have a ping pong table downstairs here that we settle most of our duels.
Nah, it's a good. I mean, honestly, like I feel like this is the honest answer. Like, these things are so they're hard to make. I mean, everything's hard to make. I'm not trying to say like our jobs are more difficult than anyone else's job, but it's just like all these documentaries are like miracles to a degree. You just kind of like bank on like, is Manti going to say yes? Is Nia going to say yes? Is Notre Dame going to participate? Will we get footage from the NCAA? Will we get behind the scenes footage? Like, it's really a bit of a stew of things that like you have to come together. All to say, like, that it's not just Chap and I, it's our directors, Ryan and Tony. It's our producers. It's our editors. It's even our Netflix executives get down in the trenches with us. So in a way, like, there's too much work to find time to like argue over stuff. I feel like 90% of our arguments over like, you need to do this and I need, like, it, we're almost like kind of pushing work onto each other as opposed to like finding like disagreements over decisions we've made. But no, I love my brother. It's a beautiful working relationship. We've been doing this for like 10 years now. Really excited to kind of make some more docs. It's going to be fun.
Do you guys agree on what is your best story, what you the best work you've made?
I think we're probably maybe most proud of our doc series we did before, Untold Wild Wild Country, which won the Emmy for best documentary series, and that was like almost a 4 or 5 year process that we did. So that was a really cool project working with that. And then maybe on the Untolds, like, we've done 8 of them now, I think. Yeah, probably we'd have to choose one that we directed. I think that would only be right. But I think the Marty Fish episode we did in volume 1 on him being the kind of first professional athlete to come forward about his mental health while he was still playing, interviewed Andy Roddick. And I think it was a kind of a really unique kind of tennis documentary and look into that world. And I think that's the one I'm probably most proud of.
I'd like to have a longer form conversation with you guys about Wild Wild Country, because just on that one, I can't imagine the story. The breadth of that story was so batshit crazy. Where it is you guys ended up 5 years working on that project had to be both invigorating and nuts, right? I mean, it just had to be everything about that project as you're trying to make your way into the business, right? Like and this business will gut you, and you guys make that because you bet 5 years of your life on something.
Yeah, it was like a crazy roller coaster ride. It was a super small team. It was Mac and I, and then my wife, who produces, our older brother does the music, and we have an editor, Neil, and basically the five of us spent like a greater part of 4 years researching, filming, editing, and you know, you release these things, and sometimes they can come out on Netflix and they kind of come and go and no one really sees it or talks about it. And so we really didn't expect much. We thought we were kind of making this weird, obscure cult story that maybe a few people would like. And I think the third week was out, Saturday Night Live did a skit on it, Documentary Now, and Owen Wilson did an episode on it. And to have it kind of enter the pop culture lexicon at that time, 2018, was kind of a bizarre experience
for
us.
Did you guys invent the cult genre, right? Because it became very fashionable right around there, and you guys told the story better than most, because a handful of them popped up right around there.
I don't want to be immodest, but yes, we did. No.
Attaboy.
It was interesting. Like, it was a really like doc series in general. Like, I mean, it was only 4 years ago, but like The Jinx had come out and that was like mega big. And then Making a Murder just like fucking broke everything. And like, just really, it felt like, now that I look back on it, it did feel just like early long form doc series days. Even the ones that we see today aren't kind of like, they're a little shorter in runtime, which is great. But no, it was like, it felt
wow.
like
he's saying he birthed the entire genre is what this guy's saying.
Well,
this guy's
saying, I asked about cults
and he just did the whole thing. Now he said, yes, not just cults, sir, but also just the doc series in general. Yeah, yeah. Don't underestimate me. It's not just cults.
Yeah. Ken Burns, who? Yeah. Come on. Thanks for the weight, bro. Please.
What other stories are you guys pursuing? What's the story that you haven't gotten that you want most? Let me ask you that one.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think for Untold, one of the ones we've really wanted to do is the Monica Seles story and the rivalry with Steffi Graf. And she's just never opened up about it or really talked about it. And I think there hasn't been a great female rivalry sports story. And I think it would just be amazing to dive into that world. The Grand Slam chase, her coming on the scene and all that. I think that's the big one for Untold that I think we could do a great job with, and hopefully we can do it one day.
But we are big tennis fans, so to steal another tennis, I think like Agassi is due. I mean, like, his book is just so good and perfect in a way, and I think he's always mentioned something along the lines of like, well, I did the book and I like the book and I don't want to mess with the book and there's no need to redo the book, and I totally understand that. But you know, there's so many audiences for documentaries. You know, it's just a booming, like, nonfiction in general. So if Agassi ever decided to sit down, I think it would just be an unbelievably fascinating career to dive into. And he's so smart and articulate. He's just a very interesting person to hear from all the time.
His book is the best biography I've ever read. Not sports biography, the best biography I have ever read.
Hands down. I mean, I think my copy is like tattered and ripped and stained because I've read it like, I mean, since college, I've been reading that book. I pick it up, you know, every couple of years. You only really know this shit when you like have been spending the last like 3-4 years of your life making sports docs. But Tennis Archive is like really good, like USTA, Wimbledon, like all these tournaments. Like they just have like unbelievable footage. And like even making our Marty Fish documentary, we would just stumble across the most awesome like Andre Agassi 1980s, 1990s archive with Sampras, like just such unbelievable stuff that it's like you could go full like time travel back into that era, and I think it would just be an amazing project to be a part of.
A lot of people put a T in Wimbledon. Okay, it's Wimbledon, not Wimbledon.
Wimbledon.
Okay, just letting you know.
Just
okay?
Listen,
people make that mistake all the time. It bothers me. I'm just helping you guys out. Okay?
Jesus, dude, can I get anything right on the podcast? I'm getting my speaking vernacular corrected on here?
The Way Brothers. Gentlemen, it really is. I can't recommend it strongly enough to the audience because, I mean, there's just no other way of saying it. We were awful to that dude. Like, we were awful to that poor dude, and yeah. And we should all be very sorry about what we did to that dude. And these guys, it's just awful. So thank you for telling an awful story well, gentlemen.
Thank you. Manti forgives, man. He's the man, so don't feel too bad about it. But yeah, thank you guys so much for watching. The kind words, it means the world, seriously. Super awesome. I appreciate it.
Hey everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.
Texting privacy policy and terms and conditions posted at textplan.us. Texting enrolls for recurring automated text marketing messages. Message and data rates may apply. Reply stop to opt out. Individual results may vary. Consult a doctor prior to use.
You've lost so much weight. How'd you do it?
I got medical treatment for weight loss through Zelty and lost 50 pounds. I struggled for the longest time, but Zelty makes it easy and affordable to get weight loss treatment 100% online. Zelty providers can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications clinically shown to help people lose weight, like Wegovy, Zepbound, and others.
I've heard those medications can help you lose weight, but aren't they expensive?
Zelty can help get the medication covered by insurance, so it's as little as $0 a month.
What if you don't have insurance?
No problem. Zelty may be able to help you get other GLP-1 medications for 80 to 90% off the price of name brand medications.
I'm ready to start losing weight. How do I get started with Zelty?
Just text.
Text Thin to 200-300 to get started today with Zelty and see if weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound are right for you. Don't wait. Text now for a link to your exclusive offer. Text Thin to 200-300. That's Thin to 200-300. Thin to 200-300.